A happy death begins with murder, a deliberate, calculated act that sets everything in motion. Patrice Mersault walks to the villa of Zagreus, a wealthy man who lost both legs, kills him with a revolver, and arranges the scene to look like suicide. He then steals money from Zagreus's strongbox and returns to his apartment to sleep. This cold-blooded act serves as the catalyst for Mersault's pursuit of happiness, a moral paradox that challenges our understanding of ethics and authenticity. Before this pivotal moment, Mersault led a life of quiet desperation, working as an office clerk, living in poverty above a horse butcher shop, sleeping in his dead mother's room. During a previous visit, Zagreus had shared his belief that money buys time for happiness, showing Mersault his safe containing both wealth and a suicide note. "With your healthy body," Zagreus told him, "your duty is to live and be happy." This conversation planted the seed that blossomed into murder, the idea that Zagreus's money could free Mersault to pursue authentic happiness. What makes this opening so provocative is how it positions a morally reprehensible act as the first step toward an authentic life. Isn't it striking how rebellion against convention, even in its most extreme form, becomes the gateway to Mersault's self-discovery? With newfound wealth, Mersault escapes to Prague, a city mirroring his internal state, with Gothic steeples and Baroque churches, both grandiose and... Rather than happiness, his freedom brings profound alienation. His days pass in churches and evening walks along the Voltava, where his desolation deepens into a solitude where love has no part. The breaking point comes when he encounters a dead man. In his hotel room, rebellion erupts as he craves women, warmth, and sunlit cities. A great lake of solitude and silence opens inside him, a void money cannot fill. In desolate Silesia, his internal emptiness reaches its peak. Yet at this lowest point, Mersault begins calculating his hunger for life and the dormant splendors within him, marking the beginning of his transformation, recognizing that happiness must be actively created rather than passively received. Mersault transforms after traveling to Genoa and returning to Algeria. The Mediterranean environment heals him, unlike Central Europe's alienation. In Genoa, he surrenders to the siren songs of happiness, swimming until forgetting his body. During the sea crossing to Algiers, he realizes he must create his happiness and his justification. In Algeria, Mersault joins friends at the House Above the World, overlooking the bay. The four inhabitants create a microcosm centered on swimming, cooking, conversations, and contemplation. Catherine sometimes undresses on the terrace, declaring, "I was naked in front of the world." Though teased, others recognize her instinct for essentials and ability to interpret the secret language of trees, of the sea, of the wind. This communal life contrasts with Mersault's previous solitude. The house is not a house of pleasure, but a house of happiness. Here, happiness emerges from fundamentals, friendship, nature, physical well-being, and contemplation. Under starry nights, they learn that double lesson which leads to a happy death. Mersault's quest culminates when he buys a house between mountain and sea. When Catherine asks why he's leaving despite happiness, he replies, "There's the risk of being loved, and that would keep me from being happy," suggesting he must face solitude directly rather than using community as a buffer. In his seaside home, after initial busy preparations and aimless days, he establishes a new rhythm following a failed romance with Lucienne. Morning swims both exhaust and invigorate him, while walks to ruins help him synchronize with nature's pulse. He learns to humble himself to nature's rhythms rather than imposing human expectations on time. Through characters like one-armed Perez and Bernard, a retired doctor, he finds meaning in village life without surrendering his solitude. When friends visit Shenoah Mountain at dawn, Meursault feels at one with the landscape. Asked if he's happy, he delivers the novel's core insight. What matters is the will to happiness, a kind of enormous, ever-present consciousness. The rest, women, art, success, is nothing but excuses. During the mountain climb, Meursault faints, foreshadowing his approaching death. Later, Bernard admits craving intensity beyond nature. "You're an idealist," Meursault tells him. "The opposite of an idealist is too often a man without love," Bernard replies. After contracting pleurisy, Meursault experiences both connection and alienation while recovering at ancient ruins. Swimming brings joy, but upon returning home, he falls gravely ill. Fever-stricken, Meursault resolves to face death lucidly. Bernard confirms his failing heart, providing adrenaline to maintain consciousness. From his sickbed, Meursault realizes fear of death is actually fear of not having truly lived. In his final moments, Meursault feels kinship with Zagreus in facing death openly. As his body cools, he experiences strange exaltation. The sun rises, and Meursault, stone among stones, returns in the joy of his heart to the truth of the motionless worlds. This conclusion presents death not as defeat, but as culmination, the final alignment of human consciousness with natural truth. A Happy Death presents a Mediterranean ethic, an alternative to both religious morality and nihilistic despair, emerging from the sun, sea, and sensual abundance of Algeria that shaped Camus' consciousness. The novel's most vivid passages describe Meursault's physical communion with this environment, swimming to exhaustion, matching his heartbeat to the sun's rhythm, walking paths speckled with crushed black olives. These expressions reveal meaning through sensual engagement with the world. Key components include the primacy of the body, where wisdom comes through physical immersion, acceptance of natural limits, and embracing present consciousness over future or past concerns. This perspective rejects conventional morality. Meursault's murder appears without judgment, suggesting traditional ethics misses the question of authentic living. For him, the only true sin is inauthenticity, being motivated by expediency or desire for money. Camus offers a third path between rigid morality and nihilism, finding meaning through conscious engagement with the physical world and authentic presence to our finite existence. The paradox at the heart of A Happy Death is that fully conscious living requires acceptance of death, a concept central to Camus' philosophy that embracing life's absurdity leads to authentic existence. The happy death refers not just to Meursault's final moments, but to the quality of life preceding them. True consciousness involves loving engagement with life's concrete realities, the sun, sea, human connections, and natural cycles that give existence its texture. Accepting our finite nature gives life its value, rather than denying death through distraction. Meursault's final exaltation represents the triumph of a consciousness that embraces both life's pleasures and its inevitable end. In our distraction-filled world, happiness comes from the quality of attention we bring to our brief existence. Camus challenges us to live with such lucid awareness that we can meet death not with fear or regret, but with quiet recognition that we have truly lived.